Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Well, first and foremost, I have to tell you how personally thrilled and gratified I was to be able to do that two-hour special on sports parenting this past Thursday evening. Now, if you didn't happen to hear it, well, the good news is that it's posted on WFAN.com as a podcast. You can just find the link on WFAN.com, find the link to yours truly, and then listen to the sports parenting wisdom from such notables as Dr. James Andrews, a former NFL star, Roman Oben, Sonia Curry, the mother of Steph and Seth Curry, and Wayne Mazzoni, of course, who's been on the show many times talking about the pitfalls to avoid when it comes to your kid and being recruited for colleges. I got to tell you, I was absolutely very, very happy with the feedback and reviews I got on the show. It was a lot of fun to put together, and I thank you all for calling in. I know it was tough to get through on Thursday night with all those great guests, but it was a terrific experience. Now, on this morning's show, in fact, I thought we'd do kind of a brief recap or summary of the key points that were made during those 2 hours. As I said, I know a lot of you tried to call in, but it was tough to get through. The lines were jammed. But hopefully today, if you have some thoughts or comments, you can just give me a shout here, of course, at 1-877-337-6666. Let me, again, go through a quick rundown of some of the notes that I jotted down in talking to these sports parenting experts. And let me begin with Dr. James Andrews, the noted orthopedic surgeon. You know, it's funny, Dr. Andrews, I'm going to guess he's probably in his mid-70s, but he was very sharp, very outspoken in his concerns about kids throwing too hard all the time as young pitchers, and as a consequence, kids today in their teenage years, they very much run the risk of serious arm injuries. Dr. Andrews noted that Tommy John surgeries with teenagers in particular are at an all-time high, and the numbers continue to climb each year. That's obviously very, very concerning. He was also very adamant about getting the word out to youth coaches and to high school and travel baseball coaches that kids who throw at full max velocity all the time, these are the kids who in particular are really setting themselves up for a real serious injury. Young arms are not put together in such a way that a kid can go out every day and throw full max. And I know, of course, with kids playing on travel teams or high school teams, and they're eager to go out and please and show what they can do. But if they keep throwing every day at full max, as Dr. Andrews says, this is not good. And we have to get our kids and our coaches all on the same page, and the parents in particular, because the parents are the ones who are basically chauffeuring the kids from one game to another. You got to understand, throwing hard when you're 14 or 15, you can't do it all the time. You got to take some time off for the kid's arm to recuperate and to basically sort of lay out and chill out for a bit. You just can't do this. Otherwise, you're looking at serious possible concerns with their shoulder, their elbow, their arm in general. You just can't do that. He also made it very clear, this is Dr. Andrews I'm talking about, and he said it on the record, that kids should not throw curves or sliders until they can shave. And again, I'll say it again, Dr. James Andrews, he said, you know, this is, this is very clear to him. Kids should not be throwing any kind of curveball sliders until they're old enough to shave. And in his estimation, that would make them around 14 or 15. So that is something that I know we've talked about many, many times here on the show about what's the right time, age for kids to throw. And I know that my colleague Steve Callis and myself have covered this topic. You know, why is it that kids are still being allowed to throw curves and sliders? At the Little League level, I mean, some years ago, Little League Baseball CEO Steve Keener came on the Sports Edge, and he said he would prefer that kids not throw curveballs, but that neither he nor Little League Baseball could figure out a way to prevent that from happening. And I got to tell you, I told Steve Keener, that you can stop this by simply empowering the umpires who work the games to first issue a warning to the kid on the mound, and to the coach as well, and say, you know, you're throwing a curveball, slider, stop doing it. And if the kid continues to do it, just stop the game and just gently tell the youngster, you know what, we're trying to do this to prevent arm injuries to your career. So we're going to remove you from the game and put you out in the outfield or some other position in the field, but you cannot keep throwing curves and sliders. And I think that's the very simple way to do it. The umpires know exactly what's going on, and I still think that's the way to do it. I mean, Dr. Andrews, you know, did say, he said, you know, if a kid is taught properly how to throw a curveball, well, okay. But he then neatly said, the problem is that very, very few Little League or youth coaches know how to teach the right mechanics to throw a curveball. And, you know, he was very upset about this, and he just said, it has to stop, because all I do is I keep seeing more and more kids in their teenage years having to have to perform Tommy John surgery on them. And he said, quite frankly, it's very difficult to operate on kids in their teenage years, and their shoulder, and their arm, their elbow, because they're still developing. It's not like they're in their mid-20s. They're still growing when they're 15 or 16. It's very, very, very much troublesome to Dr. Andrews. By the way, he also said, and a caller mentioned, asked about kids using weighted baseballs to build up arm strength. And once again, Dr. Andrews said, you know, I know it's very popular, but it's not good, because if you start using a weighted baseball, it's heavier than a normal baseball, to build up arm strength, what you're going to do is you're going to screw up your natural rhythm and mechanics, and that's going to cause problems in terms of potential injuries. So he was very, very outspoken, Dr. Andrews. And again, this is the oracle. This is the guru. This is the man who has lived his entire career working on top arms of top athletes, top baseball players everywhere. So again, I was very, very eager to hear his thoughts about that. I was just for starters. Let me take some calls about this before I turn to Sonia Curry and her thoughts about raising kids as well. Let's go to our friend Rob out in Lake Success. Hey, good morning, Rob.
Rick,
you're on the Fan.
Thank you for taking the call. I want to say that was one of the best shows I've ever heard on the Fan. It was riveting, and I'm so glad you got that opportunity. I'll try to make it quick, because I was thinking about Dr. Andrews. Number one, I've been a fan of his as a physician, myself,
right,
following him along his career and what he's done for his orthopedics. As a podiatrist, I deal with the Achilles tendon injuries, and, you know, there was a question, I remember, on one call about over 40, you know, the recreational athlete.
Yes.
That's a very common injury. They go out and they play, and they're not used to the force and jumping, and that's where the Achilles tendon in an elderly or a middle-aged athlete will tear their Achilles. But one thing I was fascinated by was the curveball. And you know, what he was saying with the kids. When I was a kid, we weren't allowed to really throw curveballs in Little League. It was something that was, even back then, scorned against. And I think what he was basically, I agree with him, the torque on the elbow from the snapping of that wrist,
right,
action. Those tendons at the youth level are so premature. The growth plate hasn't closed yet, and injuries can happen so easily. And I think it's the mechanics. It's the way it's taught. If it's taught properly, like you said, and what he said, I guess it's okay. But unfortunately, it's not really taught the way it should be, and I don't think the coaches have the true knowledge. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
When I was playing in high school, so I couldn't hit a lick, but I was a lefty, so I could pitch. I was taking the two fingers and putting it on the seam. Was that the correct way to throw? I'm even asking at this stage of my life to throw the curveball. The two fingers on one of the seams, and you have to snap that wrist going forward. Is that the correct way to do it?
That, Rob, that's the way I learned as well. That you put the two fingers on the raised raised seam. But the key to all this, as you just alluded to, is you had to snap it off.
Snap, right.
The snap is the torque that causes the stress on the elbow.
This is
what Dr. Andrews was talking about. He said, yeah, if you have a youngster and somebody can teach them the proper mechanics of throwing a curveball or a slider, okay. But he said, very, very few of these youth coaches know how to teach this. It's a very delicate kind of approach, and it's difficult to execute, particularly when you're only 13 or 10 or 14 years old.
Rick, I must say, it was really fascinating, and I think going forward, I think that's the main thing. I think the curveballs, it's because, I've done the anatomy on these things in medical school. These tendons and ligaments, especially the ulnar collateral ligament, which is Tommy John, is so small. It's literally an inch. And that thing gets torn, it's gone. And it's basically from overthrowing. One last thing, Rick. We don't hear much about the rotator cuff anymore. What do you think? And I would love to. That's why I was hoping you'd ask him. That was an injury back in the day, the rotator cuff injuries. You seem to hear all Tommy John. What's your thought on the shoulders? Why aren't we really hearing more? Or maybe we are. You would know more than I would. But
my sense is
that doesn't seem to be out there.
Torn rotators are still very much a concern, but it happens mostly with. And again, I'm hardly an orthopedic surgeon, but my impression is it happens more later on after a lot of wear and tear on pitchers' arms and pitchers' shoulders, as opposed to the ulnar nerve being snapped or cut or torn very quickly early on when the kid's still developing. But no, there's no question the rotator cuff surgery is still a big deal. It takes a year and a half to come back. It's a big deal.
Right. A lot of golfers get that kind of an injury because, the same type of thing from the rotation and snapping, their shoulders forward and stuff like that. Rick, thank you very much for letting me chime in this morning. And always listening, buddy.
Thank you so much, Rob. Thank you so much for your nice comments as well. Let's go quickly over to Rich up in Stormville, New York. Rich, good morning. You're on the fan.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good, Rich.
Yeah, I was involved with an AAU organization for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And I developed kids from 10 years old to 18. Unless that curveball, the overhand curveball, is taught properly, the wrist has to fall out at a certain angle, they're going to get hurt. I was a proponent of the knuckle curveball, which is throwing like a two-seam fastball. And I had a son that took him into college, basically, with it. People could hit it. And then taught him a changeup. He had a major league changeup in high school, left-hander.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the pitchers that they should be developing them with the fastballs, the two-seam and the four-seam, because they're going to get different looks in, out, up, down. You don't need that overhand curveball at a young age, like the previous caller said. That nerve and the growth plates are not closed. They don't close till 17, 18 years old. Sometimes.
Correct. Rich, I agree with you, and thank you for your call this morning. I will say this. One, I don't understand. Well, I do understand. There's a tremendous obsession that with pitchers in their teenage years, that the only way they will ever get any attention from a college coach or from a pro scout is if they're throwing 90 miles an hour on a consistent basis. That seems to be the goal for all these kids who go out and throw at full max or throw curves or sliders. The fact is there are so many ways to get to the big leagues. If you can, for example, you mentioned a knuckle curve. Don't even mention a knuckle curve. There are no kids today throwing knuckleballs. Now, knuckleballers were routinely around for years and years and years because they were so hard to hit. But these days, there's only a few guys who are throwing knuckleballs in the big leagues. And honestly, if you can throw a knuckleball with a little bit of control, you can make a real career for yourself. And Rich also mentioned changeups. Changeups are a huge deal. I mean, you talk to any top major league pitcher, they will tell you that, by and large, once they've developed and mastered the ability to change speeds and throw a changeup, that puts them into a much higher level of ability because they can control and change speeds and change the momentum, so the batter can't really figure out how to lock onto a fastball. Trust me, guys at the big league level, they can all hit fastballs no matter how fast they're coming in for the most part. So that's again, knuckleballers and learning how to throw a changeup, it is absolutely critical for young pitchers to master and to learn. All right, let me take a pause here. I want to continue more to get back. John Minko has your update. When I return from John's update, we'll talk more about what Sonia Curry had to say about specialization and her kids. And, of course, we'll take your calls at 1-877-337-6666. Welcome back to the Sports Edge, everyone. This is Rick Wolf. I'm doing a brief recap of the points that were made from this last Thursday's evening special two-hour show about the future of sports parenting. I do want to talk about Sonia Curry, who had some pretty fascinating stories and insights into raising her own kids. Let me quickly, though, take a call from Tom over in Brick in New Jersey. Tom, good morning. You're on the fan.
Good morning, Rick.
Yes, sir.
I should say commissioner, because I still believe that you athletic needs a commissioner.
I do too. I mean, I'm telling you, Tom, that's the way to go. We desperately need one for sure.
Today, I can tell you, I've been involved in youth baseball for over 40 years.
Uh-huh.
I love it. But what's going on today with if a kid 10 to 13 years of old can escape that age group without a major arm injury is a miracle, because these parents are really going nuts. I know of kids that play Babe Ruth and Little League at the same exact time.
Correct.
In that group. Insane.
Yeah.
Who's going to protect these kids?
Tom, you would like to hope and think that the parents would intervene and say, now, wait a minute, I know my 10-year-old, 11-year-old loves baseball and loves to pitch and pitch a lot, but he can't be pitching every day in a different team. That's going to be totally destructive. He may not get to the age of being a kid in high school pitching on the varsity team because his arm has been ruined. It's funny, Dr. Andrews told a story on the air. This is Dr. Andrews now we're talking about, saying that he was going watching one of his grandsons play youth league baseball. He said the kid was in third or fourth grade, and he was watching the coach teaching these young kids how to throw a curveball. And I'm thinking, this is Dr. Andrews in the stands, who is the biggest vocal critic of kids throwing curveballs, and his own grandson is being taught how to throw a curveball by some youth coach. The kid's probably 8 or 9 years old. It's just out of control, and I understand it's a problem. And even Dr. Andrews said, he said, you know, I sure wish the folks in Little League Baseball would tell the guys in ESPN, stop referring to the kids throwing breaking balls in the Little League World Series and being so admiring them so much. Just that's not good for those kids and their future. So it is a real problem.
I know one thing that may save these children, and it's the insurance companies. The insurance companies know football causes concussions. Overuse of youth arms causes a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to pay for them.
Well,
and
that's right.
Now I'm surprised that the insurance companies haven't figured this out.
Well, I think that's a good point, Tom, and thank you for checking in this morning. It's greatly appreciated. I do think at some point the insurance companies are going to rise up and say, hey, wait a minute now. Somebody's paying for all these arm injuries. It's us, and we want this to stop. And so we're going to put our foot down and say, stop putting your kid through so much of this ongoing pressure to compete and throw at full max. In much the same way, I think we're going to see a lot of insurance companies are going to say to high schools, saying, you know, I'm not sure we want to keep insuring your high school football team for all concussions and concerns with that. So, again, it's something that it may be happening sooner than we think. Well, we'll see what happens. Let me quickly about Sonia Curry, because I just want to shift in what she had to say. Now, Sonia Curry, she was a Division I volleyball player in college. That's where she met her husband, Del Curry of Virginia Tech. Del, of course, went on to a long career in the NBA and was obviously a great baseball player. He was drafted a couple of times as a baseball pitcher. But when they were raising their kids, and you know obviously who Steph Curry is and who Seth Curry is, when they were growing up, Sonia was very clear about this, that first of all, those two kids, her boys, were usually the smallest kids on their teams. They were not big, strong physical specimens. They were small. They were quick, but they were small. And number two, they never specialized in a sport. They played all sorts of things. They played basketball and soccer and golf and tennis and everything else. They didn't really get into basketball specializing until they were in high school. So here is a mom telling us on the air saying, I don't understand why so many parents figure their kid has to specialize in one sport. From our perspective, all we wanted our kids to do was to really enjoy the sports they wanted to play and really build upon the joy they had from playing those sports. That was key for them. Simple as that. She also mentioned that her kids were late bloomers, which I think is often overlooked when it comes to kids today in sports, that her boys didn't grow until they were really seniors in high school and then even through college. And she said even into their early 20s, they were still growing. So she said that's something people don't talk about very often, that kids don't just peak out usually when they're, you know, 16 or 17 or 18. Many times they just keep on growing. It's as simple as that. Let's get to Jack Smithlin, who had some thoughts about this as well. And Jack, I know you spoke to Sonia on the air. You got through. Tell us what's on your mind today with all this.
Well, first of all, Rick, the show was just fabulous. And, you know, it's funny because I was thinking about WFAN. And, you know, doing something like this and maybe even doing something more on a regular basis would be excellent, because, you know, a lot of people refer to WFAN as a sports radio show for professional sports and top college sports. Well, when you do a show like that, Rick, that you did on Thursday, you're reaching out to every single person that is related to athletics, parents, kids, grandparents. So what WFAN is doing in my eyes is they're expanding. They're getting out there and touching every single person, male, female, that are related to athletics. I did get to talk to Sonia Curry, and, you know, we talked about specialization. And I did a little research, you know, after one of your shows a while back about specializing. And I found that, you know, most of the NFL players, all positions were they didn't specialize.
Correct.
They were multiple sport athletes. And I did research, and I looked up some of the great superstars that we know today. Like a guy like, you know, Michael Jordan and the Mannings and these guys. 90% of the people that I researched were multiple sport athletes. So when you're talking about what college coaches look for and professional coaches look for, they look for that all-around athlete.
Right.
So talking about the show, I don't want to get into the topics, but Sonia was great. I love listening to her. You know, it was great to know that her superstar kids, herself and her husband were all multiple sport athletes. But, you know, listening to Rob before, I mean, I wish he could have gotten to talk to Dr. Andrews. That would have been a great conversation to listen to.
Yep.
So, you know, Rick, just keep doing what you're doing. You know, just keep informing the people. And hopefully the people at FAN open their eyes and actually understand the importance of what your show does. And, you know, you're one of the reasons I'm doing the things I am today. And Rob is also a big part of that. You know, I'm doing a radio show out on Long Island, and I do a lot of the topics that you talk about, and I've had a lot of success in the few shows that I've done. So I want to thank you for that. And, you know, once again, hopefully FAN looks at what you do and they understand the importance.
Well, Jack, those
don't
are...
Don't forget to mention your books, too.
Yeah.
Because, they're amazing
those.
Books.
Thank you so much, Jack. And, you know, let's be honest, Jack Smithlin has been a tremendous contributor to the show over the years, as has been Rob Fried. And all of you have been such good friends and colleagues, because we all share this passion, not just for sports, because we all grew up as athletes, but now that we're, you know, grown-ups and adults and have kids of our own or grandchildren, we want the same joy and fun for them as we had. And we know that as sports evolve and money becomes a factor, and we know that times are changing, that we try to do the best we can to make sure that that fun, those smiles, those good times, the camaraderie still stays intact for the next generation of athletes, which is why I wanted to do that show last Thursday. Because I wanted to do a check to make sure with all these top people in sports, they felt the same way, and obviously they did. So thank you all for your great contributions and your insights. And as Jack just mentioned, yeah, you look at any top draft. I think last year the NFL their first round draft picks, something like 90% of them were guys who did not just play football. They played all different sports growing up. In fact, when I was talking with Roman Oben, who's on the show on Thursday, the former great NFL tackle for many years, played with the Giants early on in his career for several years, and now he's with the NFL's youth and high school football strategy. He was saying that his own sons played a variety of sports growing up, as he did as well. There's no need to specialize. Let the kids go and do what they want to do, and if they will eventually are good enough and talented enough and work hard enough, then their talents will come through in a big, big way. But there's no reason to specialize. In fact, you know, speaking of Roman, you know, I asked him because his son RJ, who's a defensive end at Duke and was a big high school star over in St. Peter's in New Jersey in high school, you know, he was saying to me that his son is right now recuperating from a torn labrum. And, you know, I said, how do you handle that as a former NFL player and not your own son is going through some setbacks, some adversity? He said, the first thing is, as a parent, you got to make sure that you don't show your own inner anxiety to your son or to your daughter. They're looking for cues as to how they should behave. So, you know, as a grown-up, and of course in Roman's case, he went through a long career in the NFL, he knows about injuries. He said, no, just reassure your son or daughter they're going to be fine. Just make sure you listen carefully to what the doctor or the physical therapist, whoever it might be, has to say about the care and treatment. Reassure your kid they're going to be doing well. In fact, tell them when they come back and they're fully healed, their body's actually going to be stronger than they are now because they've gone through more strengthening and more physical therapy. So he said, you got to take this very seriously, but again, do the right thing for your son and act the role as the strong grown-up, as the adult, because they're looking for you for some real direction on this. You also talk, obviously, about what's happening with concussions. That's always a big, big concern for us in terms of high school parents and kids who play youth football. And Roman said, look, the fact is we are finding that we can cut down on the number of concussions that are suffered by kids by really eliminating the amount of physical contact during practice sessions. And as we know, that's happened in pretty much every state in the country. New Jersey in particular has led the way in reducing the amount of physical contact during practices. The NFL has eliminated a lot of the contact between players during their practice weeks. And a number of the college conferences are also reducing the physical contact. And of course, the less physical contact, the fewer concussions take place. I thought that was pretty interesting. And he said, look, in terms of a parent deciding on their kid to play football or not, that's a parental choice that only you as a mom or dad can make. It's as simple as that. You really can't mandate what you're going to do for your kid or not do. You make that decision as quickly as well as you possibly can. Let's get another call. Let's go over to Louie at Lynbrook. Hey, good morning, Louie. You're on the fan.
Hey, Rick. Love your show as always.
Thank you.
You do such a service for all the people. We really appreciate you. Just
thank
wanted to
you.
Let you know that. The reason for my call is I know you're talking about baseball injuries.
Yes.
And the shoulders, the arms, everything. I want to bring up the problem of ACL knee injuries for especially for women, which are 4 to 8 times more likely than men to get these alarming season-ending injuries.
Right.
I believe the kids are practicing too much, and the bodies aren't getting enough rest, and I think the coaches are making a big mistake by practicing too much and not allowing the kids with enough rest. There was a 13-year NCAA study with female soccer players, and they found out that the women have three times more ACL injuries than the men. So something needs to be done about this.
Well, Lou, this is actually a curious observation. You are absolutely correct that medical science, a lot of researchers have shown that women, girls, suffer many more times ACL injuries than men do. A few years ago, I had Dr. Robert Marks, M-A-R-X. He's a top knee surgeon over at the Hospital for Special Surgery. He came on the show. He'd written a book about this phenomenon. And I said to Dr. Marks, I said, well, what can women do? What can moms and dads, coaches do to prevent these ACL injuries in girls? And he said, the truth is, there's not a lot you can do. It's just the way the human body, the female body is put together. He, in his book, and again, I forget the title, but obviously it deals with ACLs, and you can find it on Amazon. It's by Dr. Robert Marks. He does go through a bunch of drills, exercises, strengthening maneuvers that that girls and women can do to prevent these injuries. But as you said, Lou, you looked at any college girls basketball team, a lacrosse team. Unfortunately, about half the girls on the team are wearing knee braces because they've had ACL injuries. It's just, unfortunately, that's the way the human body's put together. I'm not sure what can be done to prevent it, but again, Dr. Marks did have some pretty good ideas in his book, and it's something that we really need to be aware of. I wouldn't discourage your daughters from playing these sports, but just be aware that this is a concern, and it is something that we have to pay attention to. Hey Lou, thank you for the call. I gotta take
hey,
a
Rick.
Break. Yes,
Lou. Just one more thing.
Yeah.
Since I've been coaching 25 years and over college soccer, found out that dynamic stretching works better than static stretching, and if the coaches use that a little bit more, dynamic stretching is a slow moving. Through motion and increase heart rate, and the static stretching is more dangerous because it's too long a period of time for extended stretching and holding the stretch too long.
Got it.
Just wanted to make that point.
I'm glad you did. Thank you so much, Lou. Let me take a break, and of course, when we can return, I'll take your calls again at 1-877-337-6666. Ed Randall will be around at 9 o'clock this morning talking baseball with you. A lot of things going on in the world of baseball, obviously, this past few weeks. You know, you may have noted in the headlines yesterday, the day before, there are two Little League teams in Southern California, which have basically passed a new rule that they're not going to allow any team in their leagues to be called the Astros, because the parents in those towns are basically quote-unquote disgusted what's happening with Houston and their confessions of cheating in 2017. On a personal note, I don't know how this is all going to play out. I know Major League Baseball feels they like this to stop and go away, but this kind of fallout is not good, and it's going to be curious to see how Major League Baseball tries to put an end to this and try to separate what's happened with the cheating that the Astros and the Red Sox were involved in. It's a real concern, and I know that we've discussed this on the show in the past. I don't know how this is to be resolved. I do believe that you have to be proactive as a coach, as a parent, to sit down and talk to your youngsters and explain to them about cheating and why it's not allowed and why it's a problem and so on and so forth. Because if you don't, they're going to walk away and say, well, you know what? The guys who were cheating at the big league level, they got basically fired for a year, but now they're going to be back into the game. And I don't know if that's the strong enough message. This is a real concern. As I said, if it's now filtering down to the Little League level, people are wondering what's going on here. We're talking about, obviously, the show from last Thursday in sports parenting. I do want to remind you, by the way, friends, I always ask you to check out my website at AskCoachWolf.com. You can certainly see what's going on in terms of the opinions that are posted there. And if you're interested in my coming to talk to your town, your community, your high school, your school district about the issues in the world of sports parenting, and we know there's a lot of them, go there for more information as to how you can contact me and we can arrange something. And by the way, I do want to tell you, we're very close to the relaunch of the Sports Parenting Edge. It's the revised and updated edition. I plan on releasing that book as an ebook and as a print version as well, and I'll let you know when it's available, but it should be fairly soon. Before we get back to the calls, I want to talk to you about Wayne Mazzoni. He was also one of the guests on my show on Thursday night, and Wayne, who was always so smart and so good when it comes to parents and recruiting, you know, he made it very clear that, first and foremost, that moms and dads really need to spend some time and become educated and to do their homework when it comes to their kids and looking at colleges if they want to go on to play sports in college. And you know, the fact is, you know, and it's really sort of basic but good solid advice, and too few parents do this. Sit down with your son or daughter, ask them if they do want to play sports in college, have them prepare a list of those colleges they're interested in, and then go on to the website for each school, and you'll find almost all these colleges that have for sports, whether it's lacrosse or it's softball, whatever sport might be, they're going to have a camp where you, your youngster, can go for a weekend, get a chance to meet the coaches in person, spend time on the campus, look around, see their competition, and so on and so forth. And then the big question is, as a parent, is to ask the youngster, would you be happy on this college campus even if you did not play your sport there? Yes, we know that it's easier than ever for kids to transfer from one college to the next, but it's such a hassle, and it's full of the other concerns as well. But make sure your youngster gets out there and sees that college and spends some quality time there, talking to the players who play there then, at the school now, talk to the coaches, look around, see the campus, and make sure they get a real good feel as to whether or not they want to play there. Wayne's advice is good. He also mentioned about the online recruiting services. He said, yeah, many of them are for free, some cost money, but he said, in my experience, and Wayne's been a coach for a long time, he said, I'm not sure that's the way to go to market your son or daughter to colleges. The showcases are becoming the way to do that. Showcases, again, tend to be up and down in terms of their ability to market your son or daughter. So once again, you got to educate yourselves as to which showcases are the best ones and which ones are worth the money. Let's continue with our calls here. Let's go over to New Jersey, Saddlebrook. Bill, good morning. You're next up on the fan.
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Good, Bill. How are you?
Very good, and I got to thank you for your show. I've been a lecturer on the safety courses of youth sports and a parent of five athletes, and been through the whole gamut, and everything you go over is deeply appreciated and can't be talked about enough, so thank you.
Thank you, Bill. It's very nice to hear.
Just want to get your opinion. I'm a chiropractic orthopedist in Saddlebrook, and I've been promoting a group of parents called Concerned Parents for Youth Athletes, where they promote a structural biomechanical exam. One of the things that you brought up before in your program is the high incidence of female youth athletes and ACL injuries. A lot of that is due to an increased Q angle, which is an angle that goes from the femur down to the knee. And a lot of that is structural and biomechanical. And unfortunately today, that is never assessed in the exams that have been done by school physicians for years, and all of us have had those, and they're very inadequate in addressing the biomechanical instabilities and possible things that can be corrected in a youth athlete.
Bill, are you talking specifically about the knees or other joints as well?
Well, other joints. I've always gone over with parents doing some rehab myself, and seeing the increased number of youth athletes in physical therapy centers with what I used to think as a practicing physician of 36 years as Achilles tears, biceps tears, pec tears. I mean, things that are I never thought I would see in practice and see as helping out with youth sports in my own town and in my practice and physical therapy practices that I've had. Yep. I'm just amazed, and I've actually committed my practice to educating parents and the kids on what you can do to strengthen and prevent some of these injuries.
Can you give me an example of the more of the common concerns or issues you confront or talk about?
Well, if you start with the structure of the body and you start with the feet, and you start looking at how kids wear their shoes and how that it's the old story of the ankle bones connected to the knee bone and going up.
What in
the field you call kinetic chain.
Yeah.
If you don't have proper mechanics starting at the foundation, and then on top of that you put overuse, repetitive motion, improper technique. I've been there. I've had a kid that's gone to the national championship football team, and I've just seen kids just train because now they and their parents have become obsessed. But, you know, there's so many facets of it. I don't want to jump all over the place because I can go on and you know, to me it's just something that has to be educated to parents at either coaches' nights or something and just say, listen, have your kid checked. I mean, what I personally do is I offer, I love to educate and speak. So I offer, you know, workshops to parents. I've done the Rutgers safety course for 28 years as a volunteer. You know, they brought on concussions and things like that. There are so many injuries, and I always tell the youth coaches that never mind the physical injuries, the psychological injuries of building a kid's self-esteem or lack of building a kid's self-esteem is just mind-boggling.
Well, you know, Bill, I agree with you, of course, and thank you so much for checking in this morning. I'm glad to know you're doing this, and you know, the fact is, you mentioned not just the physical development, but the psychological development as well. This is, if your youngster is serious about sports, the more that they can become educated about their body and the way they cope with ups and downs of sports, and obviously their parents as well, this is extraordinarily valuable. Bill, you have a website you want to put out there for people?
I'm at Dr. Thimmel, DrThimmel.com.
Great. Hey, Bill, thank you so much. I really appreciate the call.
And thank you. Your work is just, I was so surprised to hear it on the other night and excited. I was hoping it was going to be a regular thing before Steve Summers, but God, it would be so much nicer. I've been telling the coaches about, you know, getting up early and listening to it because I've been doing it for years. And thank you again. I just hope it catches on.
Well, I'd love to do it. It was a lot of fun to put together, and it was great feedback as well. Hey, thank you, Bill. Appreciate it greatly.
All righty. Have a great day.
Take care. Let's go quickly over to Harlan in Melville. Hey, Harlan, good morning. You're on the fan. You got about 2 minutes here, friend.
All right, good morning. I just listen every Sunday morning, and you just hit a chord when you're talking about showcases and injuries. I have two boys that one played baseball through high school, all through college, and a younger brother that played football and ended up playing football in college as well. And first off, you know, when in the high school level, you have some coaches that become a little overzealous with training, and it's all for sometimes it's not in the kids' best interest. On football, they used to have lift-a-thons, and they push the kids, and they get injured. And my youngest son ended up with back surgery after his sophomore season at college. And the other side is you're talking about showcases, and we found my older one played travel ball, and we were all over the country playing ball, and the showcases. Unless you are the elite, they don't pay to go to these showcases. It's the kids that the parents believe in the kids, and they end up paying for these showcases, and they're really just money makers for the organizers.
That's
and
correct.
And it's very, very leery of the people that are putting on these showcases.
Harlan, I got to tell you, and I'm running up the clock here, but I couldn't agree more with your point about showcases, and thank you for your call this morning. I will tell you, this is what's to me, showcases would fall under the domain of a commissioner of youth sports, where showcases are graded and ranked so that parents can go on like a Consumer Reports and say, this one is really worth going to, this one is not so much worth going to, because they are moneymakers. They are not in any way licensed or regulated by the government. You take your chances as a parent, and it's really, you know, caveat emptor. But again, if there were some sort of federal commissioner who could oversee all these things, you at least have a better idea of what you're getting involved in. But I hear you loud and clear. And again, that's, to me, just makes all the sense in the world that we can have a situation, a website, where you can say, okay, I want to have my kid go to these showcases. Which ones are the best ones to attend, and what do they cost? As Harlan pointed out, if your kid's a superstar athlete, chances are he or she doesn't have to pay for a showcase, but everybody else does. How much should you pay? Is it worth your time? Is it worth your while? How many coaches are going to be there from top colleges? Okay, that's going to do it for this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks this morning to Connor Green. Please stick around for Ed Randall. He is up next. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.